Well, hey there. It has been a little bit of a hiatus since we have taken the air to talk about some Cincinnati Bengals football. I know their season is over. There is still some football being played. A lot of headlines surrounding the AFC North and a lot of headlines surrounding the Cincinnati Bengals. So we are here to talk about those with you. Talk a little NFL draft, a little bit of positional needs, recap of a 2023 season, a little bit of everything this week. I'm Anthony Cazenza. He is John Sheeran. John, you have been a man of patience. You have been a man that has adhered to a wobbly schedule, and I appreciate it, my friend. How have you been?
It's been good, dude. I'm not doing dry January like it seems like the rest of the country is, but it's been dry in terms of podcasting, which is it's a good break, you know, to start the year, and now we're diving on into the offseason. Can't wait.
Yeah, I mean... We're at least a half decade, if not close to a decade, into this thing now. So we've earned 1 week off, I think, right after the Bengals season end. But we are still going to be bringing you a ton of different stuff, a lot of draft talk, a lot of free agency talk, a lot of news and notes as it pertains to the Cincinnati Bengals. So we're going to still bring you a lot of different stuff. Some of the stuff you've been accustomed to really over the off-season months, which is, you know, draft profiles, free agent profiles, potential breakout players for the Cincinnati Bengals, a lot of draft coverage. We may have some stuff in the works specific to some special draft coverage, and we'll keep you updated on that. I'll talk about that a little later. But at any rate, this is the Orange and Black Insider, part of the Cincy Jungle Podcast channel. I'm Anthony, he's John, and you can get this show on a number of different platforms, whether it is our YouTube channel, if you like the video stuff that we do, and we do put up a lot of video stuff that we'll be talking about, so you may want to join there, and of course on the audio side too, but you can get to our YouTube channel over on John's side there. There is an Orange and Black Insider show icon. Click that, click the subscribe button, click the bell to be notified when we go live and when new content is available, and of course, give a thumbs up to the stream if you would. Appreciate that. We stream to a couple of different Twitter accounts as well. I guess they now become spaces. So on Cincy Jungle's Twitter account and on the show Twitter account, sometimes on my own, we stream out there. And then, of course, on Cincy Jungle's Facebook, you can give that a thumbs up with a ton of other people. We stream our shows there. And of course, if you're an audiophile and you like to listen to the audio side of things, you can get that through our show, whether that's our show, Coach Speak and Talk Talk with Matt Minnick, Talking Football with Bengal Jim and Friends, and or Three and Out with Jason and Kevin on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, all of the major ones. We are there. Amazon Music, I think we're there now too. Just got to go to the Cincy Jungle Podcast channel, subscribe to that, leave us a review. If you can, we appreciate it. Well, John, the big news, the big news is, as it pertains to the Cincinnati Bengals, is that they may be losing for the, second straight season now, right? And there is a lot more velocity behind this year, it would seem. Brian Callahan is interviewing for the head coaching job, a really... A couple of NFC South teams gunning for him, as well as the Chargers, who the Bengals actually play next year. They are interested. They are interested in Callahan, as well as the Titans, who surprisingly let go of Mike Vrabel. So, your thoughts on Brian Callahan getting a lot of run? Are you surprised since the Bengals didn't make the playoffs and there's a lot of quarterback stuff, or did that play into Callahan's corner this year?
No, I think. compared to last year, because he was a finalist to be the head coach for the Indianapolis Colts. He lost out to Shane Steichen. And then Lou Anarumo was a finalist to be the Arizona Cardinals head coach. It seems more like it's probably going to happen this year, just because there's just more interest from other teams. He's gotten second interviews with multiple teams now as well. So you have the Carolina Panthers he just met with today on Thursday. He's interviewed with the Atlanta Falcons. So there's your two NFC South teams. The Los Angeles Chargers were also interested. And he had the Tennessee Titans scheduled a second interview with him as well. So he's kind of all over the place. There's seven official openings as of now, and he's met with more than half of them. So in terms of just comparing him to other candidates, he's one of the hottest ones in terms of just, you know, like the frequency of which he's getting these meetings and these interviews. It's more than just, you know, teams testing the water. Like, there's a legitimate feeling that he's probably not going to be back at Cincinnati in 2024. I believe it was Dan Graziano, the ESPN NFL insider, who predicted that he's going to land the Panthers job. And that makes sense considering they're desperate to maximize the quarterback that they just drafted first overall. And Brian Callahan, like, has been a part of developing Joe Burrow. But more importantly than anything, and I think this is the real reason why he's getting run this year, it's not just the fact that he's been the Bengals offense coordinator for the past 5 years, which is, by the way, the longest tenured offense coordinator in the NFL is now Brian Callahan, believe it or not. But this year specifically, working with Jake Browning, evolving that offense and scheme to best fit him and his strengths, I think has really taken the NFL, like the NFL's taken notice of that. And they want someone with experience of maximizing and uplifting a quarterback who definitely needs it, whether that is a Bryce Young, whether that is a Will Levis, or whether that is a rookie who's not even in the NFL yet. Like, maximizing quarterback play on those rookie contracts is the most valuable thing that an NFL franchise can do. And that's why offensive coordinators who are good at their jobs typically don't last very long being offensive coordinators. They're typically given the chance to run the show themselves. So that's why Brian Callahan is really in the situation right now, because of what he did with Jake Browning. And Jake Browning's success is directly linked to just the architects behind this Bengals offense.
So Brian Callahan right now, you may or may not have mentioned it, but Brian Callahan right now is the longest tenured offensive coordinator, I think, in the NFL, yeah. What, 5 years into his post. So the league is definitely trending to younger, offensive-minded offensive coordinators like Callahan. Now, the criticism, or one of the criticisms and one of the similarities to a guy that has been a hot name of late as well, last few seasons, Eric Bieniemy, is that Callahan was not the primary or really the play caller for the Bengals, whereas Bieniemy wasn't as well with Kansas City, and then he moved on to Washington. I think that changed there, correct? When he moved to Washington, that was kind of one of the big things there. But so that's kind of where I think teams have had their hesitancies a little bit with Callahan, but there is no doubt. And I would say, I mean, of course, the two seasons with Burrow, 21 and 22, and how far the Bengals made it and everything they did there, of course, I would say he did excellent work there, as did Zach Taylor, Burrow himself, and this little brain trust that they do to come up with their offensive scheme, what they like to do. Obviously, it works. But there is an argument to be made, John, that, I mean, this year and the twists and turns and all kinds of different things. I mean, I mentioned, yeah, the Bengals missed the playoffs. Yeah, there's some quarterback stuff that happened. But Browning proved that he can win games, at least on the Bengals, as a starting quarterback if you need him to. Burrow had that stretch in the middle of the season this year where he was arguably the best quarterback in the league at that point in time. And then, of course, they had to alter and pare things down when he was hurt at the beginning of the year. So we're, you know, the big talking point has been, okay, well, three different offenses that Callahan and company have had to concoct this last year. And I think a lot of teams kind of took notice of that, particularly with Browning on the rise.
Yeah, and especially because Brian Callahan is the offense coordinator, and people, like you said, like, there's this distinction about, like, how much is he involved and how much does he get credit for if he's not the one calling the plays. And the dynamic between him, Dan Pitcher, the quarterback's coach, and Zach Taylor is one that's kind of a mystery. But the reality is, like, even though Zach Taylor has final say and he's the guy who's, like, calling the plays into the heads of the quarterback, The game plan and the scheme and the structure of the offense does not come from his brain alone. It comes from, like you said, the brain trust that they have there. And the fact that they've been doing this now for 5 years together, the process that they have is established. And for the most part, when all the pieces are healthy, it works. So, like, NFL teams know that. And I think specifically when it comes to being a head coach, like, yes, you have the Kyle Shanahans and the Sean McVays and the Andy Reids and the Zach Taylors, like they're all play callers, right? And like the system and the scheme, it stays with them regardless of the coordinators that come and go with them. But being a head coach is so much more than just calling plays and whatnot. It's just the aspects that I think Zach Taylor gets a lot of credit for, and I think Brian Callahan deserves a chance to really prove that as well because of his background, because he's seen it work and he's been a part of it with Zach Taylor too. You gotta remember, this guy was the son, he is the son of a former NFL head coach and Bill Callahan, one of the most respected assistants in the NFL right now. He's been coaching in the NFL for over 10 years. He's been directly linked to a lot of successes from other quarterbacks aside from Joe Burrow. He first worked with Tim Tebow and got the most out of him with Denver. Obviously, he was there for the Denver Broncos Super Bowl run with Peyton Manning, Matthew Stafford, Derek Carr. Like, he's had different experiences with different schemes and different types of quarterbacks. He's been very well versed and experienced with all that. But even still, like, going back to his young days, like, he's grown up in NFL life. He's got such a great brain and mind for scheme and plays and just everything that is involved with just structuring an offense. Like, he's obviously very well versed with offensive line schemes because of his dad. He's been part of a lot of different offenses and a lot of different types of ways of just how to structure everything. So I think teams know that as part of his resume, and he's still only, like, I think 39, 40 years old. So he's not very old in terms of, like, that being a negative detractor from other head coaches who'd maybe not get opportunities. So he fits the bill for a lot of things that what teams are looking for, but specifically with the Panthers, just because that seems to be like one of the favorites where he lands. Like, they're very desperate, I think, to just get the most out of Bryce Young and just try to fix him. And specifically with what happened with Jake Browning now, like, he becomes, I think, right in the focus point of, like, if you can do that with Jake Browning, what you can do with Bryce Young.
Look, there's 32 of these jobs available on planet Earth, right? So all of them, in some form or fashion, particularly for a guy who has not held this post before, are desirable. All of the four gigs we mentioned are differing levels of desirability. So I look at this and I go, okay, the three teams on the Southeast that are interested in him, that would be Tennessee, Atlanta, Carolina. There's kind of, for me, there would be a lot of mutual interest in that regard, wherein, you know, hey, there's kind of the clay to mold. You mentioned Bryce Young, you mentioned Will Levis, these young guys where a guy like Callahan could get in there and, you know, kind of get his hands dirty and, you know, try and right the ship for some of these guys. And same thing with Atlanta. They need to establish who they have going forward as well. But then you look at the Chargers. I don't know how deep the interest level is there, but when you have Justin Herbert there, I think Callahan was particularly offered that job based on, you know, the established quarterbacks there. I would think that would probably be, you know, in the back of his mind based on franchise quarterback being there and under contract for a long time. I would think that would probably be his preference, even though he wouldn't say that out loud. But there's a lot of intrigue to all of these positions for him.
Sure. And it comes down to more than just quarterbacks, too. I think ownership is probably the main one in terms of, like, how much control that you have over the roster in general. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think, like, the Panthers and it specifically are interesting, because David Tepper is, well, there are better owners than David Tepper. I'll just put it that way. He did not have a good he's not had a good start to his run in there in Carolina. He's thrown beers on poor Jaguars fans and whatnot. So yeah, I think when you get this first opportunity, it can definitely make or break how the rest of your career goes. And if you can maintain this level of coaching, or whether you have to go back down to the assistant level. And I think that has to be in the mind of anyone interviewing for some of these jobs, because typically the teams who are looking for head coaches are coming off of bad years. And for the most part, they've not really been good at sustaining any type of success. So when it comes to Callahan, he has to figure, do I want to, you know, take this opportunity that may or may not come ever again? Or do I want to stay in Cincinnati, where I know, you know, what I have, and, you know, I'm comfortable with my job, and I'm confident that if we continue to have success, it's particularly on offense and with quarterbacks, then future opportunities will open up, and maybe I'll just wait my time. I feel like that's easy for people on the outside to kind of figure, just because they're familiar with the Bengals and, like, they want to keep continuity for the sake of continuity. But like you said, like, these opportunities are very rare. Like, this job is very rare in general. And I think that if he develops a good relationship, a good rapport in some of these interviews with the owner, like it, that's all it'll take. It'll just take one connection. And that's what happened with Zach Taylor too. Like, he could have stayed with Los Angeles and could continue developing as a coach under Sean McVay. And I think there are a lot of people who figured, you know, on the outside that, oh, you're going to go to Cincinnati. You're like a first time play caller, a first time. You haven't even been a coordinator in the NFL for more than 6 weeks. Now you're going to be a head coach for the Bengals. Like, that's a very risky move. And it's worked out for him. So it doesn't automatically, just because you go to a bad franchise, doesn't mean that you're doomed to fail. Unfortunately, that's what happened with Frank Reich, because he just got blamed for a lot of struggles for Bryce Young in general. But I think if there is that connection, and that all depends on how he feels about it, then he might just pull the trigger and say, yeah, this is my time.
Yeah, and it, to your point about organizations too, I mean, it takes a buy-in from the top, as we've seen with the Bengals. You know, they bought into Zach Taylor's vision, his approach, etc. Obviously, Burrow has helped immensely in that regard, but you get the right head coach, you get the franchise quarterback, you get an organization that, yeah, maybe has struggled in the past, but buys into what this new coach is selling, and all of a sudden, you know, a team that's been kind of flailing out there a little bit turns things around. Now, the big thing and the last thing I want to talk about with this, John, is, I mean, you can see here, you know, Dave Ham, Pastor Dave Hammond, can they keep Pitcher teeth with the comedy here on Twitter here? Do you think Pitcher and Callahan will face off and swap faces to commit unspeakable crimes like the 90s action flick with John Travolta and Nicolas Cage there? Of course, John Telly kind of chiming in with, Callahan leaves, what do you think happens with the Bengals OC position? Cornell saying, I think they promote Dan Pitcher. So the million-dollar question, I know that Callahan has not left as of yet, John, and he may not leave, but inside hire, outside hire, what is it, Pitcher? What's your gut telling you as the contingency plan for Callahan leaving?
I don't think there's just one. I think there's multiple, and they probably go in this order. Remember last year, Dan Pitcher got an interview with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers to be the offense coordinator. I think the Baltimore Ravens also showed interest as well. The Bengals saw that and said, oh, yeah, this could happen in the near future. So they offered him a raise, and what is heavily believed to be a future promotion should Brian Callahan move on to become a head coach. So Dan Pitcher is right now the planned replacement for Brian Callahan. However, Dan Pitcher, who interviewed with the New Orleans Saints earlier this week, if he leaves to become an offense coordinator, or if he leaves with Brian Callahan to become Callahan's offense coordinator at wherever he ends up, I believe that they would still stay in-house, and I think Troy Walters will get the first chance, the wide receivers coach.
Great call.
Troy Walters, I think, interviewed with the Houston Texans last year to become their OC. It went to Bobby, I'm going to butcher his last name, Bobby S., who's now getting head coaching opportunities elsewhere. But I think Troy Walters would become a great offense coordinator. I think he's definitely due for promotion in due time. If they decide to look outside of the organization, the first name that pops up to me is Shane Waldron, who was the Seattle Seahawks offense coordinator for the past couple of years. Remember, he was also interviewed along with Zach Taylor to become the Bengals head coach back in 2019. I think he's proven to be a good offensive mind and obviously a good play caller. He's maximized what they're doing up there with Geno Smith. So they got options, obviously, and this is far from over. There's no panic button. The Bengals have prepared for this, obviously, with doing what they did with Pitcher last year. So whatever happens, the Bengals will have a plan with this. I don't think they'll end up doing what they did when they needed a defensive coordinator and have the search go into like late February before they land on their sixth candidate.
Yeah, good call. I mean, I normally I'd have something else really to add on that, but I think you laid out the blueprint on that very, very nicely. And Waldron, if for those that do not remember, I believe he was the passing game coordinator under McVay when they worked together with Zach Taylor, all under McVay. And then, as you mentioned, both Waldron and Taylor interviewed together for the head coaching gig here. And, you know, the rest is kind of history, as they say. So Brian Callahan interviewing for head coaching jobs, a lot of interest there. And then the Bengals will have to make certain decisions from there, depending on what happens. You did lay out a couple of scenarios that I don't think readily pop to people's minds, which is, oh, Pitcher goes with Callahan, or, oh, Pitcher gets another job elsewhere. So yeah, definitely. And I think Walters would be an in-house candidate. And then I'll just add this before we move on to the next topic here. But, you know, I know Marvin Lewis era and Zach Taylor, and there's a lot of differences in how things are run there, but the Bengals have traditionally when they've kept their head coach in place and they've lost a coordinator, they've lost an assistant, they usually try and keep things in-house. I mean, you can look at the, you know, Jay Gruden, Hugh Jackson, and who was it? It was Gunther after, you know, Zimmer left. And I mean, that has happened a lot in Bengals history. So I think the preference probably would be, especially with the success that they have had on that side of the ball, I think the preference would be, yes, let's find someone in-house where there's a comfort level there and then restock the cabinet, especially if you lose two offensive assistants there. That would be tough in one offseason. But the Bengals may be looking at that. We will see. And we'll definitely keep you updated on what happens with Brian Callahan and the coaching search there. So the 2023 season is over. I just want to talk about a couple little awards here. I think some of them are pretty obvious, but we'll do like four or five of these and we can talk about some stuff. Now, I think there are some obvious candidates for this that really won't prompt a ton of discussion, but I think we can also, what I would like to do is also maybe give an honorable mention and or someone that you didn't think about. So I guess we could just kind of start with, you know, let's start with defensive MVP. I think that's real low hanging fruit. I think you could say that, you know, that's Trey Hendrickson here, who had, you know, a season for the ages as a pass rusher for the Cincinnati Bengals. But I do think, John, just to kind of bring a different discussion with it, sometimes an MVP for me, and maybe not for others, is what does the team look like when you lose a guy, when you lose your quarterback, when you lose a guy? And, you know, down the stretch, I know it was late in the season, but DJ Reader losing him, that was really, really tough on this defense, particularly when you played a physical team like the Pittsburgh Steelers late in the year. And then, of course, you lose Cam Taylor-Britt at some point, you know, about a month stretch as well. And he was playing at a Pro Bowl level throughout a good part of the season, the first half of the season, basically. So, I mean, a couple of those guys come to mind. I think it's pretty easy that Trey Hendrickson is the guy there, but those are a couple other guys I think are worth mentioning, not only because of what they did on the field, but the impact after they left with injury.
I think Reader's case to win that award outright is pretty strong, and it's pretty damn close, I think, to Hendrickson. You can just look at what he did on the field. Like, forget what the defense looked off the field. He was still as dominant as ever when he was healthy. And I think what really sells him there is that, at least with the edge group, you had Miles Murphy kind of developing down the stretch and becoming a nice complementary or rotational edge rusher and provided some pressure off the edge. You had nothing up the middle. And that's why it's the biggest weakness on this roster right now. It's the biggest need.
We'll get to that in a minute.
Yeah, right. So tease spoiler there, but like DJ Reader without him, like they had nothing. Like, and that's not an insult to BJ Hill, who's still a solid player, but like when your best pass rusher and run stopper is a 340-pound nose tackle, and it's not even like he was legitimately great at both. Like, that's a special player. And like what happens with him in this offseason is greatly going to impact. It's going to have a domino effect on some of their other moves as well. And so, yeah, like he's pretty damn close, I think, to Trey just for being the MVP straight up.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, a couple names to mention there. Offensive MVP. I think it's a closer race than maybe many would want to admit between Chase and Mixon, both over 1,000 yards, both had, you know, a number of touchdowns to each of them and a very integral part. So, I mean, I guess I would kind of go Chase, but that gets affected because of the quarterback situation at one point this season, at 2 points this season, really. And then, you know, Mixon kind of didn't have a 100-yard game until, you know, the end of the season there. So there are a couple of things there, but I also want to give another honorable mention. And of course he's going to be the special teams MVP, but Evan McPherson, man, he really helped get this team. He kicked a lot of long field goals this year and just is, you know, anytime you're like, oh man, 55 yarder, 52 yarder. And it, I mean, vast majority of the time, the guy hits it. And when this team was going through quarterback issues and going through issues on offense, you know, McPherson was hitting these long kicks to keep the team in the game. And then they ended up getting these eventual wins under Jake Browning. And I think he was a big part of that. So to me, I mean, I think it's probably Chase. I think there's a good argument for Mixon in terms of offensive MVP, but let's not forget about McPherson and what he does for this team too. Or I guess team MVP, I should say.
Team, I mean, I'm always going to include the quarterback here for just the very obvious reasons. When Joe Burrow was healthy, the Bengals were one of the best teams in the NFL. When he wasn't healthy, they weren't good. And when he was hurt, for good, they had to completely redo the offense to be competitive again. I mean, that tells you everything that you need to know about how much he means and how impactful he truly is. And obviously, it goes without saying for just any quarterback in general. But when you have a quarterback at this level, it just matters so much more. So obviously, when Burrow was out there, Chase looked his best, which is why he probably wins this award anyways. The MVP for me is always weird because I think most valuable is different than just the best and who had the best overall season. But for the sake of him playing basically the entire season, and for the most part, whenever Chase Brown wasn't out there looking like the only true, you know, like difference maker of an athlete on the off on the entire offense, it's probably Jamar Chase for me.
Hard to argue with that. And so your team MVP would be Joe Burrow. That's your vote there. And that's kind of going back to that DJ Reader argument of what does this team look like without him type of thing.
Yeah, it seems lazy. Like I would almost give it to Trey too, just because I mean, outside of just the 17 and a half sacks, like he did carry the pass rush. And I feel like that adds to the argument too. If there's any player on this team who deserved like any sort of all pro recognition, it was Trey. Like he probably should have been second team at the very least. So the team MVP might just be Trey. But again, like I just always want to stress, like even when the quarterback doesn't play, like he's like his value is still shown, just like you said with DJ Reader not playing.
Okay. Hard to disagree there. So let's do two more and then we'll transition here. Let's go with one, and these are I'm ending with these because to me these are the trickier of the, you know, the five awards we're talking about here. So let's start with Rookie of the Year. There are a lot of other years in the past with the Bengals where you go, well, there's like one guy, and that's it, you know, it's a one horse race. We saw some good things out of Myles Murphy, particularly late in the year. We saw some decent things from DJ Turner, pretty good things actually from DJ Turner at the beginning of the year, had some struggles late. Jordan Battle came in and steadied things in the secondary. You have Chase Brown kind of lighten up some things at the end of the year here. Who is your Rookie of the Year for the Bengals this year, John?
I think when you put it all together, it's Chase Brown. But he was also the guy that, at least for me, I assumed that he would have the biggest impact because I think we all thought he was going to be running back two right out the gate, and that wasn't the case until he got healthy in like November. So there's that aspect of like there was already expectation, and I think he pretty much met them, if not exceeded them a little bit for just how explosive he was and just the explosive plays that he immediately brought. But it was also just he was very frequent on special teams. I think he had like four tackles, which was up there near the team lead. He played like well over 100-something snaps there. But I kind of want to give it to Jordan Battle just because there was also expectations about him kind of contributing early, but I don't think people expected him to be as good as he was. Like I think the PFF grade that he had of 82.5, it pretty much matched how he looked. Like he wasn't like lighting the world on fire at the safety position, but he was consistent. He was always in position. He rarely missed tackles. He missed like maybe one or two leading up to like the final week and a half of the season. So he was everything that they needed once he started playing consistently, just to bring stability at that position for how much Nick Scott underwhelmed. So there was expectation with Jordan Battle's contributing, but I think he ended up being better than we expected as a rookie, which is why I might lean towards him.
I think he's got a really strong argument. I think there were some nice things, and you have to dive a little deeper to really kind of give Myles Murphy the respect in terms of metrics and different things that, you know, next-gen stats and PFF scores, that sort of thing, towards the end of the year. You know, I didn't say his name initially, but you go back and you say, okay, well, what about Yoshi? And the thing that knocks him is not a lot of catches, not a lot of yards overall, 15 catches for 116, but four touchdowns. That's 27% of his total receptions, John, went for touchdowns. And his catch against Seattle really in a tight game there cemented things, obviously was key to that last you know, I know the Browns had a lot of guys sitting in the last week there, but two touchdowns in that game. And just a guy when T. Higgins, a big target, had kind of a little bit of a struggle in terms of staying healthy this year. Having another big-bodied guy that could come up in the red zone and come up with a handful of touchdowns, I think that's a big thing. I don't know what his role is going to be with or without T. Higgins next year in 25. I don't know exactly where he'll be in the depth chart, but having that size, and you know that this red zone ability, that is something that the Bengals will need going forward. That is something that they missed in the last two postseason runs that they had, John. They just were not getting in the end zone. They were kicking more field goals. And I think that even though the overall receptions, the overall yards, whatever Yoshi's career may be, they may not be way up there or super exorbitant, but if he can continue to be this red zone weapon, this big target that can catch touchdowns, he had a touchdown against the 49ers in that big one too. So if he can continue to be that, I think, you know, he's got a really bright future with this team, even as a guy who's like number four, you know, on the depth chart, who knows?
I mean, it's very rare for, you know, late sixth round picks to be starters for like a long period of time. So the fact that after 1 year, I think everyone can agree that Yoshivis can eventually become a better version of Trenton Irwin, like that's a win for the Bengals to me, because Irwin in and of itself is a great success story as a former undrafted yep. free agent who was like a couple years into the league before he even came to the Bengals. And then he just played well above his pay grade and provided value. But Yoshi is obviously bigger. He's taller. He's faster. He's even got maybe even better hands. And we saw all of those flashes in his rookie year. And the fact that he was generating so much hype during training camp in the preseason, and there were talks about, is this guy going to take over for T. Higgins next year? Like that may or may not end up happening. It doesn't need to happen in order for him to be a success story for where he was picked. So if he can just be that high upside number four option for the next couple of years, like that's a win. And I feel like that he's already there at that point.
Good arguments across the board for that one. And then one other one, this may not be as convoluted as rookie of the year, but there are a couple cases to be made here. Most improved player of the Bengals this year, John. There's a couple of guys that immediately spring to mind, but I want you to go first on this one.
This is tough because I think most people will look at least regressed maybe or on this roster. This is tough, man. I don't know if I have an answer off the top of my head. I actually don't have an answer off the top of my head. I really don't.
Okay. Okay. Here's a good one here from Boyd Keith Adams. Cam Taylor Britt. That's a good one. I think you could look at, it wasn't an overall outstanding season, but I think you could say Jonah Williams maybe exceeded expectations, especially with a position switch, and stayed healthy the whole year and was effective. There were some issues here and there, but it steadied the right tackle position more so than it's been steadied for the past couple of years. So I think you give a tip of the cap there. I think you could look at Jake Browning as most improved, but the guy I would say that I found most improved, and it's really, I think, just the fact that he got a shot, and that's Tanner Hudson. I think, you know, he bounced around on a couple of teams, didn't really do much. And then this year he was he was like tight end three or like tight end one. He had kind of a weird role with this team, but I think going forward, I think the Bengals do need to draft another tight end, maybe two. Debates on how high there. We'll talk about that in a second. But I think going forward, this can be another red zone guy. This can be another tight end two, another ancillary weapon in this offense with his size and catch radius. He's not going to be a star or anything like that, but I think he stepped up at a position group that was decimated from free agency attrition and all kinds of different stuff, and at least gave the Bengals some respectability in terms of numbers, a nice target for Browning that was kind of a nice security blanket for him when he had to step in.
Those are good answers, and I think the reason why I didn't think of them is because two of them just didn't play at all last year, right? So like how am I to know like how much Tanner Hudson has improved when he didn't play? And the same goes to Jake Browning, but I think Cam Taylor Britt is the obvious answer here. I think that there's still more room for improvement and growth in general, and that's naturally, he's only entering his third year, but I really think the ball skills really did come to life there. Obviously the interceptions kind of speak for itself, but he was in better position to make more consistent plays at the catch point. And obviously the tenacity in the run defense was still there. So I think he was a lot of people's picks for being like a breakout player. But yeah, just like remembering who he was as a rookie and who he was this past year, that is the obvious answer for sure.
Yeah, I think had he stayed healthy and there was still that same or similar level of play during the games that he ended up missing, I think you're talking about a potential Pro Bowl berth from him. He was playing at that level. And I think, you know, there's I don't want to say lockdown, but I think he, and we've got a little soft spot for him since he came on our show right after he was drafted. But I think there's a potential for a pretty high ceiling there. So just a handful of 2024 season awards before the 2023 season, I suppose. So when it wanted to get those out of the way for all of you there, we're going to talk about positions of need, and then we're going to do a brief draft prospect talk on some players that are intriguing us on a lot of different levels based on the biggest positions of need. Again, this is the Orange and Black Insider, part of the Cincy Jungle podcast channel. You can get the show on YouTube underneath John Sheeran there and that Cincy Jungle icon. There is an Orange and Black Insider show icon. Click that. Click the subscribe button. Click the bell to be notified when we go live and when new content is available. Give a thumbs up to the video if you like what we're doing. We appreciate that. You can also go give a thumbs up to the Cincy Jungle Facebook page. We stream there, as do some of our other podcasts. They stream live there. I think Talking Football with Bengal Jim streams live there as well. So you can go check that out. And of course, speaking of Jim's show, you can also get his hours, Three and Out from Jason and Kevin, as well as the great episodes from the coach, Matt Minnick, on your favorite audio streamer, whether that is iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, all of the major ones. We are on it. Go subscribe to the Cincy Jungle podcast channel and get all of those shows there. And of course, you can keep it to cincyjungle.com for your news, opinions, analysis, as well as all the good stuff that my co-host is doing over at A to Z Sports, covering the Bengals and the AFC North. Well, you mentioned one of the top of the list there, John. Bengals' biggest positions of need in 2024. You're saying three tech, interior pass rush, et cetera, I think was kind of at the top of your wish list or need list for the Bengals. I have a hard time really disagreeing with you on that. There are a couple of others I look at too, but I think this conversation also centers around, okay, we kind of got to see what free agency, what happens in free agency too, T. Higgins, et cetera. But I think as we get set for free agency and draft season, the Bengals need more pass rush. You look at the Baltimore Ravens this year, John, and I know the AFC North teams that were in it, two of them were one and done in the postseason. The Ravens seem to have the best shot. What do they have, 60 sacks as a team this year? I know sacks aren't the end-all be-all of pass rushing statistics, but 60 sacks is ridiculous, and they get them from all kinds of different ways. So I think the Bengals need to really address their pass rush. I know they had an outstanding season from Trey Hendrickson, as we just said, but they got to figure out how to get to the quarterback more regularly and from different spots, particularly with a penetrating three tech.
Yeah, on this subject, I feel like the downturn in terms of overall pressure was due to just the downturn in the play in the secondary. It led to more explosive plays, led to the quarterbacks just getting the ball out quicker and finding those opportunities down the field. When you have all that chaos back there, it does put more pressure on your front four to win. And I think in general, Lou Narumo requires so much just of his talent to just win up front in those one-on-ones. I think with the Ravens, particularly with Mike McDonald, it's a lot of scheme. It's a lot of schemed up pressures and blitzes. And that's where a lot of that production does come from, considering they don't really have like that Trey Hendrickson type pass rusher on that team. But the Bengals need the equivalent of a Trey Hendrickson at defensive tackle or through technique specifically. I think without DJ Reader right now, you have BJ Hill entering the last year of his deal. He's a solid, okay player who needs a guy that he can rotate with. You have nothing else. Zach Carter provides you nothing at this point. Josh Tupou is a free agent. Jay Tufele, I think, has 1 year left on his deal. He's barely even active this year. I think compared to like receiver, where there's a heavy assumption that T. Higgins is at the very least going to get the franchise tag, and you have younger guys who are developing, like you at least, like some of those things are just kind of baked into your expectations as to what the rest of this offseason is. No one really knows what's going to happen with DJ Reader in that entire position in general. It's a very stacked and deep free agency class, including Reader. And we don't know if his injury is going to, you know, help the Bengals like retain him or what his market's going to be. But considering there's just a lot of mystery there, it's a lot of unknowns, and it's already really bad without the guy who's, again, on an expiring contract. It just feels like the biggest need with like receiver, with just that general mystery around like both losing both Higgins and Boyd. And I guess offensive tackle, obviously, because you kind of assume that Jonah Williams is kind of gone. So those feel like the top three, but nothing seems more dire in terms of the importance and just the lack of anything than defensive tackle.
So are you, I mean, are you just kind of lumping defensive tackle? Because to me, nose tackle, I know it's a completely different position of the three tech that we're talking about, but nose tackle now comes into big, big focus based on what you said about Tupo, obviously the Reader injury, et cetera. And this division likes to run the football. They like, they thrive on it. They like to throw the ball, but they like to run the football. So the Bengals need run stopping prowess. They need, some interior pass rush help. So, I mean, I guess you can kind of pair them all as one, even though you want two different kind of defensive tackles, potentially. That's got to be at the top of your list. And going back to an episode or two ago that you and I talked about is, you know, one of the keys to the offseason for me is being obsessed with the AFC North and being obsessed with how to beat these teams in the AFC North. And you have to be physical, you have to be big, and you have to be fast. And so, I think that position exemplifies that almost more than many others there. You know, wide receiver is a bit of a wild card. I think a lot of people are resigned, unfortunately, to the fact that Tyler Boyd might be gone. I think majority says that T. Higgins is probably going to be here. I think the majority opinion, whether it's vast majority or not, I think it's going to be tag T plays in 24 with the Bengals and then maybe move on from there. So if both of those guys go, that pushes wide receiver to, you know, one of the top spots on the list as well. One of the spots I think the Bengals it may not be super premium free agency spending. It may not be first round pick necessarily, but I think the Bengals need a little more sizzle and versatility. And I like Chase Brown. I've loved Joe Mixon I think they need a little bit more versatility and speed, explosiveness, playmaking ability out of the running back position. You and I talked and previewed Jahmyr Gibbs last year, and you know, that's a player that I think provides that. But John, I think that's a spot too that the Bengals should be looking at, whether it's kind of an Antonio Gibson type of guy, that wide receiver flex type of guy, but something like that, an added dimension to your offense, I think could help.
I mean, here we are like 10 months after we just had this discussion, it feels like, with running back and tight end, where they just need more dynamicism and they need more versatility. And they just need anyone really that can just get them that second gear of speed. Chase Brown's a good starting point. And it does feel like the Bengals are on the verge of starting over running back. I think the Joe Mixon conversation now revolves around this $3 million roster bonus that he's due a couple days after the free agency begins. That seems to be like the tipping point of like, if he's going to be around here, they're going to keep him after that date. But they may not want to. They may want to look for a younger and quicker and more, you know, athletic option there to pair with Chase Brown. But at least they have Chase Brown going forward. This is my favorite fact about the Bengals this year right now. They have $0 committed to the tight end room in 2024. They are the only team with $0 cap dollars, cash dollars committed to an entire position group right now.
It's crazy.
It's obviously going to change, and I think they have easy options baked in, aka re-signing Tanner Hudson, re-signing this running back who doesn't run the ball and Drew Sample. Very cheap and frugal options to just establish a base there, but the options are endless in terms of building off of that. And I think everyone can agree that just going out there and signing the next version of Irv Smith is probably not going to get it done anymore.
They need to prioritize that position. And I think you saw what the effects were on two position groups that they have traditionally not overly prioritized in tight end and safety, and the fallout from that. Now, there were some bright spots in there. We mentioned Battle. We mentioned Hudson, Dax Hill had some nice moments at the beginning of the year, but there were some growing pains there as well. So, you know, I think you saw the fallout from them just kind of more or less ignoring those position groups, particularly tight end in the draft, to get one of those high-end guys. Kincaid has been a guy that was, I mean, he had a great game against the Steelers this last week. And, you know, you look at Laporta before, you know, he kind of had an injury there at the end of the year. But Laporta, I mean, just stud. So, I mean, the Bengals need to prioritize. And if they don't want to spend free agency money on it, at least prioritize some of these positions that have been lower on the pecking order in the draft to kind of rebuild some different areas of their draft. Any other that you think that we need to talk about before we talk about a handful of prospects, John?
I don't think interior offensive line can go untouched here. I think obviously you have Karras and Kappa for another year. I think the safe assumption is that Volson enters like training camp as the starter left guard, but not only for, I mean, they should probably get someone to compete with Volson just because I think it right now he's just average at best and he's already going to be 26 years old. So he's not like he's a young guy anymore, but also Ted Karras entering last year of his deal. You have no potential like future replacement there. And luckily you didn't have to rely on any depth behind him or Alex Kappa for that matter. But that might not be the case in 2024. You know, the injury bug could hit the offensive line next year, and your young options, developing options there, are non-existent. So, you know, I don't think it would be the worst thing in the world for them to invest, you know, a somewhat early round draft pick at either center or guard to plan for the future, to get more athletic, and to potentially even start at left guard this year. So I feel like it's right now it's not like viewed as like a significant need, but it can definitely creep up on them.
Yeah, and there's some, you know, there's some other positions where you go, well, maybe cornerback two is unsettled, depending on your thoughts on DJ Turner's end of the year and Chidobe Awuzie and his recovery from the, you know, 2022 injury there. I thought he had some nice moments, but there's, you know, there's some other things there. I think, much like I talked about, not necessarily a hybrid player at running back, but a versatile player. Maybe they need to get another player in there, and maybe they have one in house already and they need to reshuffle some things. Getting a guy that played that Trey Flowers role. And I know he had limited snaps in his one and a half seasons with the Bengals. That first year, he was a godsend, really, kind of as that slot guy. And I think, if I remember correctly, he had a pick in one of the AFC championship games or one of the big games against the Chiefs. So he was a guy that I think provided some value. The Bengals decided to move on. And, you know, if you can get another versatile secondary player, that whether that's a slot guy or a big corner that you can kind of move around at different scenarios, I think that'd be a valuable piece too.
Yeah, for sure. And I think Dax Hill can feasibly take on that role. And I think he showed flashes of it this year. He was primarily in charge whenever they had like one-on-one opportunities against tight ends. Like he was up there doing in the dirty work, but obviously they need him back there at safety and they need him still developing, you know, in that specific role. So you don't want to move him around too much when you still need to make sure that he's okay with his main responsibility. So it's a weird situation for them. Like I could definitely see them investing in another safety, another better version of Nick Scott type, at least in theory, in order to give Dax Hill maybe some more free reign. But if not, like you're right, they may have to, you know, dive into maybe a potential, like either a big cornerback or someone with experience in that regard.
Pretty big offseason for the Bengals, because what, they have two extra picks than the seven, right? They have nine. Yeah, so they got nine picks. I think they have the sixth most space at, 70 million or so, I think, at this point, in cap space for next year projected. So they've got a lot of things to play with, but they've got a lot of areas they need to address on their roster for sure. And so that's where we are going to go next, which is, a little bit of some guys we're looking at. And these are some players here that we are looking at. And look, these are low hanging fruit because of number one, they're on bigger teams or teams that were in it in the you know, national championship hunt at the end of the year. But these are some of the names that we kind of came up with here. Rome Odunze from Washington. That's a guy, John, I think if there is a T. Higgins replacement needed right away, or a guy that, you know, he's 6'3", 210, big catch radius. There's some things that remind you of T. Higgins. There's some things that remind you a little bit of Mike Evans. Byron, we talked about defensive tackle, the two from Texas, two different players, one three tech, one big guy, sweats like 350, 360. Murphy's that penetrating three tech, both flashed in the playoffs there. Liatu Latu, the edge from UCLA, John, this is kind of my guy. I did the Pac-12 thing last year with my guy, Thule. 23 and a half sacks and 34 tackles for loss the last couple of years from him. So, I mean, man, that's a guy that can wreck things there. Jalen Wright, the running back from Tennessee, that's the guy that a polarizing guy, but can give you some sizzle. He can catch. He really improved as a receiver, at least numbers wise. You know, is he kind of a Kamara type of player? Is he not that type of player, but a guy who's got some big playability? Of course, J.C. Latham, the offensive lineman, possible tackle replacement out of Alabama. The Bengals like those SEC players and offensive linemen. And a guy not a lot of people are talking about at tight end. I know everybody's Brock Bowers. Of course, we want to keep an eye on him. But a guy I looked into a little bit, Brevin Spanford, a tight end out of Minnesota, dude is 6'7", 270. Numbers aren't eye-popping, but he's kind of like Washington out of Georgia last year. Big guy. I think teams are going to start falling in love with him. He could be that third round type of guy, project type of guy. So these are some of the players that I think, at least top of mind, that I could, you know, I feel like the Bengals should and could be looking at this year in terms of prospects and in the draft. And I could bring that back up if you want me to look at
the I would love to, because there was someone, the Texas defensive tackle. Isn't there like two in this class?
Yeah, there's two of them on that wrong. Tavondre Sweat and Byron Murphy the second. I'll bring that up here.
Yeah, so they're going to be popular options in mock drafts, and I believe there's already some that have already kind of shown that. J.C. Latham, I think, was mocked to the Bengals as well in some early versions. Aramis Mims, I'm believing in that name right, is the tackle at Georgia. These are the names that we're all just going to have to get familiar with. Odunze, I think, is kind of getting that top 10 love too. So it's a pretty, It's a pretty stacked receiver class in general, which bodes well for what the Bengals need. Guy that I'm going to throw out there into the ether, primarily just because his name, Jaxon Powers-Johnson. Like, what a powerful, I mean, you talk about Ben Jarvis Green Ellis. Like, this is like a powerful, you know, three piece suit law firm, interior offensive lineman out of Oregon. I think it was widely regarded as like a day two option entering the offseason. Now there's some more hype about him. I know Brandon Thorne, the offensive line guru, has really talked him up and views him as a potential first round option. So the Bengals are picking 18th. There's going to be probably like three-ish quarterbacks taken before them. So the old philosophy of there's only like 18, 20 first round prospects a year, Bengals are going to get a chance at one of them. So a lot of these guys are definitely going to be popular in the mock draft circuits and everything like that.
Yeah, just talking about Wright here, he had a 1,000-yard season last year, 7.4 yards per carry, only four rushing touchdowns, had 10 the year prior, but went from two catches to 22 catches, John, in this last year. He's like 5'11", 215-ish, I think. So not a huge guy, but I think that's a guy, again, you bring to the stable in your running backs. If you find good value with him, he makes a lot of sense for some sizzle. And a lot of this has to be, how do these guys work out? What do they look like? Is Latu a fit for what the Bengals like to do? Or is he kind of like what the Chargers did with Thule last year, where they made him an outside linebacker? He had 4.5 sacks last year for the Chargers. Latu, you know, he won a number of awards here. This last season, as I mentioned, 34 tackles for loss. Let me just double check my numbers here. I think it's 34 tackles for loss the last two seasons and 23 and a half sacks the last two seasons. So that is a dude who knows how to get after the passer, get into the backfield. Not a huge guy. I think he's high 260s in terms of poundage. So Bengals have kind of preferred more of those set the edge kind of guys over the years. But he gets the passer. So you need more of that. And he could be a guy that is intriguing for sure.
I mean, it's January 18th. I feel like I've talked about like five prospects. That's about all I know at this point. So there's going to be a lot more time for us to, specifically me, to catch up on some of these names and whatnot. But yeah, running back, tight end, offensive line, defensive tackle, wide receiver. A lot of different options that the Bengals can go with here.
Speed, athleticism, tenacity. I think that is the name of the game for the Bengals as they restock their roster in 2024. We got through a lot of stuff today, John, but we were overdue. It's been a little bit since we've taken the air. So let's drop the mic and get out of here, my friend. What do you have for us as we start closing up?
Not necessarily a Bengals topic, but it was obviously very cool to see the Lions win a playoff game for the first time in my lifetime. Obviously very shades of what the Bengals went through a couple of years ago. It was funny, though, to me before the game even started when they were booing Matthew Stafford and the uproar about that. I had a take on it. And it's essentially like there's no animosity and bad blood, I believe, between Detroit and Matthew Stafford. But when you've been suffering as a fan base for generations and you see the opportunity to actually achieve something that, again, some people who were in that stadium had never seen before, everyone's the enemy. I totally get why Matthew Stafford was booed out of his mind. I thought it was so funny when it became a controversy, when people were calling out the Lions and Lions fans. I think, honestly, I'll say right now, if Joe Burrow ends up not being a Bengal at some point in his career and he walks into Paycor Stadium for a playoff game, he will get booed by Bengals fans. Like, don't pretend like you are so above like the respect and just the camaraderie of just competitiveness in the highest of atmospheres. I thought it was so funny when they booed him. And honestly, like the Lions deserve to win that game anyway. So that's just my take.
Yeah, but very cool to see that after everything that you know, that team has been through and the lack of success. I mean, I think everybody, at least who, you know, on the Bengals side of things, can resonate. And now, since some news dropped, I believe earlier today, my mic drop is, I did this a couple of weeks ago, but I'm going to redo it since this guy's sticking around. Shameless plug, we're trying to get John Harris, the author of Tomlin, The Soul of a Football Coach. I guess I'm just obsessed to a bad degree with the Pittsburgh Steelers because they are super successful. And yeah, their season didn't end the way that they wanted to, but the Bengals have struggled mightily against this team. So I am obsessed with, you know, them, I guess, and their winning culture and what they do. This guy has been one of the best winners. There are a lot of criticism surrounding him in terms of lack of postseason success. But I think, John, as we looked at that roster, and we still look at it, you take Mason Rudolph to an AFC wildcard playoff game and the rest of that roster. Kudos to Mike Tomlin. Kudos to all the AFC North coaches really this year. I think they all have some coach of the year type of credentials after what they all had to endure this year. But go check out this book. It's like $20 on Amazon, $25 on Amazon if you want to go get it. Tomlin, the Soul of a Football Coach. It was announced earlier today that he is going to at least stick around for the final year of his deal with the Pittsburgh Steelers. They have not had a losing season in his, God, what is it, 18 years or something with the team. Ever since he took over from Bill Cowher, he has not had a losing season. However, he is 8-10 in the postseason as a coach, but heck of a coach. I know we don't like the Pittsburgh Steelers. I think there's a lot to respect with that organization, not necessarily the way they do some dirty shots on the field, but I mean, they're successful. They're physical. They're winners. So, we've been trying to get that author on this on the show here. We'll maybe try and do that again. But go check out that book. I'm going to start reading it. I haven't started reading it yet, but interested to kind of get – there's a foreword by Tony Dungy as well. So interested to kind of get the perspective there.
That was so funny too. Another funny moment, Tomlin asked about his contract status and then just walks off. But yeah, he dropped a lot of bombshells today when he actually wanted to talk about it. He said he's back. He's open for the idea of an extension. They're going to bring in competition for Kenny Pickett at quarterback, and they're going to bring in someone from outside the organization, offense coordinator. A lot of changes in Pittsburgh, but not Mike
Tomlin. A lot of changes. Yep, not Mike Tomlin, but I think ironically, what at least the report I saw was Brooke Pryor, who covers the Steelers for ESPN. She does a great job for him. I think she may have been, I don't know for sure, she may or may not have been the one that asked him that question about him sticking around. He bails. And then, you know, earlier today, I'm looking at ESPN and it's her relaying the news that he's sticking around. So I'm like, oh, fate is funny. Football has a sense of humor. That is for sure. But John, thank you, buddy. Appreciate your input. Appreciate your time. Thank you, everybody who tuned in live and or after the fact. Go subscribe. I've already said it. Shameless self-plug on a number of different platforms. We appreciate it. And the Bengals are in off-season mode. There's one more AFC North team alive in the postseason. And we're anxious to see what happens there. So let's have some fun. We'll have more shows, more content for you going forward. John, have a great rest of your week, my friend.
You as well.